This evening's topic, as was advertised, is the Torah imperative and halachic parameters of personal health management. That's what we're going to talk about. Tonight's topic is more of an introduction. We're not really going to speak so much this evening about specific issues. We're going to try to stay away from very, very practical details, but really just talk in a general sense about hashkafas haTorah, the Torah philosophy perspective on matters of health. Just to begin with the disclaimer, which I think is obvious to most of you, and that is that I am not an MD. I have several degrees that I've earned and I'm proud of, but I'm not a physician. I hope not to be giving you any health tips. If it sounds like I am, so then please consult your local, I guess not necessarily orthodox doctor, you can consult your local doctor. If at any point it sounds like I'm saying something which I'm not really qualified to do, please feel free to call me on it. But obviously I have my own experiences, my own thoughts, my own research, but I'm certainly not presuming in any way whatsoever to be in a position to give any medical tips, thoughts, or advice. In addition, in general, I try to practice what I preach. That's something that's really... something that I try to hold myself to personally. When it comes to this particular topic in general, and maybe certain specific issues, all I could say is that I'm trying. You know, over the past several years, I've become a little more health conscious than I had been in the past. Please feel free to call me on any inconsistencies that you may observe in my own lifestyle. But I can tell you that this is an effort that we all should work together on, and I hope that if there are areas that we need to improve in, we'll all be motivated to work together. So, as you know, we live in a world in which there's what's called today a health craze. This is maybe a little small for you to see, so I apologize, but just this morning, I Googled health craze, and then Google let me finish it off within America, so I said, okay, why not? So these are the first, 8 or 10 results that came out in a Google search for health craze in America. And if you just see some of these topics over here, you see that the whole concept of health is something that is of great interest to the community at large. First of all, it's an incredibly powerful and lucrative industry. It's one that is driving many corporations. I'll show you on the next page something very interesting. You see over here words like gluten-free craze. Is it healthy or not? An article recently from the Wall Street Journal. America's health craze for fish oils, wiping out the world's, and then it goes on to say, fish supply, or at least one type of fish out in China. The coconut water craze, the organic craze, these are all different types of crazes, and some of them will come, and most of them will go, and many of them are fads. But without a doubt, the world at large, and I think our country in particular, seems to be very focused at the moment on health, and we should realize that, as hopefully you'll see tonight, that for the Torah, and for our tradition, the health craze is nothing new. I'm not sure that craze is quite the best way to put it, but our interest, our concern, our preoccupation with health and the importance of us maintaining our own health is not really something that's new. And it's certainly not a fad. It's not something we just discovered a couple years ago, and it's not going to disappear anytime soon. I heard a story on the news a couple of months ago, and I was able to Google and find it right away. One of those little business briefs that they have sometimes on the radio. So here's an article from early August talking about the juice industry. I don't know if anybody here has ever tried to, liquefy your salad, but a lot of people are doing it today. Actually, it's an incredibly powerful and a really, like I said, a very lucrative industry. From this particular article, it says that there are juice shops that have opened up all over New York City, and juice bar sales last year totaled $1.3 billion nationwide. So just think about that for a moment. What juicing basically is you just take usually vegetables, it could be fruits as well, and just liquefy them. They just turn them into juice, and people are spending, as you can see, way more than $10 for a 17-ounce cup of just their, whether it's spinach, kale, wheatgrass, and other vegetables. The folks behind these libations say that they offer impatient, health-conscious, and affluent New Yorkers a way to get the nutrients they need, and for now, that's a big sell. Only time will tell whether this craze will last. 5 years ago, according to this article, there were frozen yogurt stores that were opening up all over the city, and now it's hard to find them. 10 years ago, it was the Crumbs Bakery. So, no way to know where we're headed with this. But one thing is clear in that right now, out there, people are really, really interested in health. And it is a bit of a craze. So I think you know, given that that's what's happening out there, it's an appropriate time for us to reflect inward. It's an appropriate time for us to stop and to think and to ask ourselves basic questions about what is the Torah belief, what are the halachos, if any, that guide us and should, lead us to ask ourselves how we should be living healthy lifestyles. There is a Gemara in Shabbos Daf Pei Beis, which I think answers the question which is posed on the top of this page. It's really important to talk about health. So the Gemara tells us that Amalei Rav Huna le Rabba Brei. The Rav Huna once said to his son Rabba, "My time lo shchichas kamei de Rav Chizda. Why is it that you don't go to Rav Chizda's shir? The Mechada de Shmaisei, because if you go, you see that he gives a great shir." It's a fascinating discussion. Rav Huna talking to his son Rabba, and he says, "You know, you should try out Rav Chizda's shir. You would love it. You'll learn a lot." So he said, "My Izalagabe, why should I go to him? He doesn't teach Torah. Every time I go to him, he's just talking to me about worldly matters, but not really things of great spiritual substance." So his father says, like what? So he goes on to give him an example. We're not going to give details right now, but he basically gives him instructions as to how he should take care of his bodily needs, what he should do in the restroom, what he should not do. So he says, "Why am I going to go waste my time and do that? If I want, I can, open up Reader's Digest to learn about that. But if I want to learn Torah, I'm going to go to a great Torah sage, a great Talmud Chacham." So his father says to him on the bottom, and this is bolded, underlined, "Amalei, hu asik b'chaya de b'riyasa v'atamas b'mila di alma." He's talking to you about matters of health, and you just say this is mila di alma, these are worldly matters? Kol shekein zilagabe. He says, "You should certainly go to him. I thought he was just a great Talmud Chacham. I had no idea that he was giving you health tips. If Rav Chizda is actually going ahead and giving you tips and ideas and insights into how you could better manage your health, al achas kama v'kama kavachomer, you should go to learn by Rav Chizda." Very fascinating Gemara. So there's another Gemara I'd like to share with you. Here's a nice little picture. Yeah, I really got carried away with this PowerPoint stuff. I can never do this on source sheets, but why not? But here's a nice little cartoon of two people who are sort of blaming each other. So I thought this sort of captured, in a nice little illustration, the theme behind this Gemara. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that Amalei Antinous le Rebbe. Antinous was a bit of an antagonist, said to Rebbe, "Guf v'neshama yechol lifter atzmo min adin." That in the future, the body and the soul, if they wanted, they could pit one against the other and could blame each other, in a sense, on the day of judgment. Ketzad. Guf, the body, could say to God, "Neshama chatasa." It was the neshama, the soul, that sinned. Shemiyom shepir shemimeni harinimuto ke'evin domi bekever. Because the day that the soul left me, I was lifeless. So the body's defense is going to be to God, "You can't blame me for doing anything wrong, because without the soul, I'm nothing. It's like an appliance without electricity." And the neshama omeres, the neshama is going to say, "No, guf chata. It was the guf, was the body that sinned. Shemiyom shepirashti mimenu, and I can prove it, because the day that you took me out of that guf, harina parachas bavir kitzipor, I flew, so to speak, to the heavens. I had no interest in worldly matters. There's nothing in this world that would have enticed me, that would have tempted me." So the neshama, the soul, says to God, "It can't be me, it has to be the guf." So everybody's blaming each other. So what happens? So Amalei, so Rebbe says to Antinous, "Nice try," but he says, "I'll give you a mushal." And he goes on to say a mushal for a melech vasev adam, a human king, who has a beautiful paradise. He has a beautiful orchard with wonderful fruits. And he appoints two shomrim, two guards, to make sure that the orchard is not vandalized. One of them was crippled, and one of them was blind. So the king said to the, So the crippled says, so the crippled guy says to the sumo, "I see beautiful, beautiful fruits in this orchard. It looks delicious, very enticing." So he says, "If you want, put me on your shoulders and I'll tell you where to go and we'll eat them together." So what happens is the chiger goes on top of the sumo, so the blind person puts him on his shoulders and they go ahead and they enjoy all the fruits. Later the Bala Pardes comes and he says to them, "What's going on? Where are my fruits?" So the chiger says, "I don't have any feet. Don't look at me. I'm not capable of walking." And the blind guy says, "I can't see. So obviously it wasn't me." So ma'asa hirkiv chiger agabi suma v'danasim ke'echa. The Gemara tells us that the king goes ahead and takes the suma and puts him on top of the chiger and judges them together. Afakadosh Baruch Hu maybe nesham of zarka b'guf v'danasim ke'echa, says the Gemara. Rebbe says to him that that's what God will do. Ultimately, we are held accountable for what we do and we don't do in this world as basically an entity which is composed of both body and soul. And in general, I think if we do the cheshbon and nefesh over here, and we think about the way we relate to ourselves, so we may really have two separate modes. You know, if we're in shul, we're davening, I have a sitter in my hand, or if I'm holding a chumash and I'm learning Torah, I may at that moment really be focused and preoccupied primarily on my soul, on my neshama. When I'm out there, not necessarily exercising, but even exercising, when I'm out there living a regular life, indulging and engaging in physical activities, I may think of myself as a goof. And rarely, if ever, do we appreciate the fact that we are not a goof only, and we're not a neshama only, but rather, we are really a combination of both. And in fact, before I tell you the next source, I'm going to tell you, I challenge you, I may be wrong, but I'm not aware of any other place where in Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber and the Ramah, the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah go out of their way to explain line by line, word by word, what a bracha means. You know, normally, you'll find the halachos in Shulchan Aruch, when should you say the Berachas Hamotzi, when should you say Shahakol, when should you say Osa Masa Bereishis, and many details of Berachas Hamazon, but literally to take a bracha and dissect it, line by line, I'm not aware of any other situation where you'll find that in the Shulchan Aruch. When it comes to Asher Yotzar, when it comes to the bracha that we recite when leaving the bathroom, so there in Siman Vav and Arachayim, the Mechaber and then the Ramah explain word for word what exactly the bracha means. And I'd like to focus just on the conclusion, where the Shulchan Aruch writes on the words of Mafli La'asos. At the end of Asher Yotzar, we say, Rofecha Basor Mafli La'asos, that God made this great wonder, this Pele. What's the Pele? Mibnei She'adam Dom El Nod. Malei Ruach, because this is simple analogy. It's one which is very primitive in nature. But man, the man's body is sort of like a barrel. What's that called? A node. It's a wine jug, but it's made out of leather, let's say. So it's filled with air. V'miyasa adam minod nekev kachudah shemach machad. And if you make a little hole, you puncture a little hole in it. Haruach yotzei. So air, all the air escapes, and it loses its function. V'adam olin akavim. And you see a person. We have cavities. We have holes, orifices all over our body. V'ruach v'rucho mishtameres besocho. And somehow the spirit somehow remains inside. Hariz apella. So says the Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah says it in perhaps in a little more of an esoteric way. That simply the fact that the spirit of man is contained within the guf, there's this fusion between physical and spiritual. This is something which takes place within each and every human being, and this is something which is truly unique. So when we leave the bathroom, when we have this chus to say these words, I'm not going to ask you what you thought the last time you said it, but from this point on, mafli, the word pella, what is the true wonder? So again, you pick your system, the circulatory system, the respiratory system. Our bodies are amazing. The whole thing is a pella. But Chazal tell us the real pella is the fusion between body and soul, the way the two come together. And just a little taste for what's to come, because we're not really talking about eating tonight. That'll be in some of the future lectures. But the Mishmura says, over the quoted for the Magen Avraham, something which is very profound. The Kavanos, this is from the writings of the Reb Chaim Vital, the Talmud of the Ari. It writes, the Hanashama Nehenes Meruchnias Hamachol, Vaguf Nehenes Megashmias Hamachol. Strange idea. That the body benefits from the nutrition, the physical nutrition of the food, and the soul somehow benefits from the spiritual nutrition of the food. A fascinating idea. And that somehow serves to unite, to combine, to fuse the body and the soul together. You just know, again, another quick Google search will show that, everyone out there is trying to understand the science of the soul. These are just a few of the books that came up. The Soul of Science, Science of the Soul, The Science of the Soul. What is the secret? What is the secret to the soul of man? So this is something that's not only a pella out there, but it's a pella in here. As the Ramah teaches, that's what it means, mafli la'asos. Ma sheshomu ruach adam bekirbo. I think that this is a very important perspective to have by way of introduction as we discuss this. Rav Schwab, one of my favorite svarim, is, if you ever heard me speak before, you know, in his book on prayer, so he writes on page 22, also in his commentary in the Bracha Vashi Yatzar. Furthermore, he writes, this bracha refers to the complete human being. In Kabbalistic terms, the human body is called Adam Haruchani, spiritual man, because the human body contains not only Ramach Evarim, 248 organs, and Shesag Yidin, 365 sinews in the physical sense, but also contains the same number of spiritual organs. We have many expressions for our spiritual and emotional functions which utilize parts of our body's metaphors. Such examples are, as the pasuk says, Lev Shomeya, an understanding heart, which means intelligence. Lev Nishbar, broken heart, meaning humility. Hamu Me'ai, my intestines pain, meaning filled with sympathy. Klayos Yo'atzos, the kidneys advise, meaning intuition. Rav Schwab is saying something very fascinating over here, and that is that as we protect and preserve and maintain our physical health, what we are essentially doing is we are also maintaining and protecting and preserving our spiritual health. We speak about the 365 and the 248, not coincidentally corresponding, of course, to the mitzvot of the Torah, that there's a totality over here of body and soul and mind and Torah, which all together, all the different parts have to function together in unison in order to really enable us to fulfill our role in this world. So I have a question. I think that this is the most important question of the night, because I said tonight really just talking about general ideas, and we're going to talk about specifics in the weeks ahead. Do we have bilus on our body, over our bodies? Now, bilus is a word that's probably easy to translate, but I chose not to because I couldn't think of a word in English that I thought, you know, captured it as much. Do we have autonomy over our bodies? Do we have control of them? Do we have dominion? Do we have the right? Do we have the right to determine? Do we have authority over our bodies? What's the answer to that question? So I think most of us, if we're thinking about it at all, we'll say, yeah, on a certain level we do. After all, I choose what to eat, you know, not necessarily because I'm health conscious, because I like the taste. We decide, you know, what kind of haircut to get, if we have hair. Some of us, you know, put on makeup, some don't put on makeup. You know, these are all, you know, certain preferences, tastes, discretions that we have, and we are entitled to go ahead and choose what we do with our body. It would be considered inappropriate for someone to go ahead and say, I'm sorry, but, you know, I really don't like your haircut. You know, I want you to, you know, get a different style next time. It's my business. You know, if I'm interested in your opinion, I'll ask you. Otherwise, not. So to a certain degree, we do have bilus over our bodies. To a certain extent, that is true. However, not completely. There was a story that was just the news earlier this month. On November 2nd, you may have heard the story. It was reported in many new agencies about a very tragic story of a young woman. His name is Brittany Maynard. I think I'm pronouncing it properly. Here's a picture of her, probably not taken not that long ago. She was recently married and died of a brain tumor at the age of 29 years old, within the first year after she was married. The reason why her story became so popular and was really spoken about in so many different circles is because she made the choice to die on her own terms, right? She was told that she had a terminal illness and there was no cure, and there was no way that she was going to beat it, but derech hateva. And so therefore she got up and she moved to Portland, which is one of the states which allow for assisted suicide. And with her family at her side, on her own terms, she took her life. And she wrote a blog which was, you know, published all over, and this is one of the quotes. She writes, I don't want to die, but I am dying, and I want to die on my own terms. Having this choice at the end of my life has become incredibly important. It has given me a sense of peace during a tumultuous time that otherwise would be dominated by fear, uncertainty, and pain. I would not tell anyone else that he or she should choose death with dignity. My question is, who has the right to tell me that I don't deserve this choice? That I deserve to suffer for weeks or months in tremendous amounts of physical and emotional pain? Why should anyone have the right to make that choice for me? This is very compelling, and obviously very tragic, and I don't want to be judgmental whatsoever of her in particular, and I can completely identify, even though I can't really understand, because I've never been put to that sort of test, but I completely identify on a certain level with what she's saying over here, and that is that it's my choice, you know, how I live, how I die, if I have to endure lots of pain, or I choose not to. But as you know, and we're not going to talk about this topic at all tonight, we're not talking about assisted suicide, as you know, from a Torah perspective, that's not necessarily so. And in fact, even in the secular world, this is not something which is so mekubah. She had to, after all, I don't know where she came from. She couldn't die in her own state the way she wanted. She had to go, because there are only a few states that allow for legalized assisted suicide. But certainly, within our world, this is not really something that's so simple. So short of this, though, if we're not, this is an extreme example. But let's talk about in other situations. Do we have complete autonomy? So again, in the secular world, people will say yes. The concept of pro-choice and right to die and assisted suicide, We may not subscribe to these beliefs, but if we think for a moment from the Torah's perspective, do we have autonomy, do we have bilus over our bodies? Can anybody think of examples of situations in the Torah, prohibitions in the Torah, perhaps mitzvahs in the Torah, which would seem to indicate that we do not have complete control over what we do with our bodies? Any suggestions?
Tattoo.
Tattoo. Okay, let's start with tattoo first. Tattoo is a good example. Okay, we're not talking about the details of a tattoo time, but just think about that. It's my body. I can do what I want with it. Right? You don't like the picture, too bad, don't look. And what if I conceal it so nobody will see? The answer is it doesn't make a difference. The Torah explicitly prohibits a person to put a tattoo on his body. Other forms of self-mutilation. The Torah Parshas Re'eh says that when a person is in mourning, he's not permitted to go ahead. That which was common in certain ancient pagan societies, where they go ahead and cut parts of their body, and not allowed to do that. Chov al-biatzmo, self-injury. It's actually a big discussion in the Gemara Bava Kama, what exactly is the source. But it's assumed, as a davar pashut in the Gemara, that it is prohibited for a person to injure himself. And in fact, just to give you a little preview for something to come, we're not going to discuss tonight, Moshe Feinstein, the famous Tshuva, writes that if a person diets in a way that's unhealthy, if a person denies his or her body nutrition in a way that is not being endorsed by a physician, so this is an example of chov al-biatzmo. It's an example of self-inflicted injury. We don't think about it as such, because we don't walk away with bruises, not necessarily, but it is a form of chov al-biatzmo. And we shouldn't assume that it's necessarily permissible. Very interesting you mentioned bris mila. That came to me today, and you know, I never really thought about bris quite that way until this morning when I challenged myself to think about, okay, where else do we see it? So I appreciate that you thought of that right away. It's fascinating. And I'm not sure that this is at all pshat on any level, but I'll just share with you a thought that I had this morning. You know, we bring a child into this world. At that moment, father and mother feel a tremendous sense, obviously, of joy and happiness and satisfaction, and they feel like creators. Not necessarily with a capital C, but they feel like creators. Look what we made. Look what we brought into this world. And you feel a sense of autonomy. You feel a sense of authority. You feel a sense of control, of ownership. Comes along the Torah and says when the baby is 8 days old, you know, mutilate the baby. You know, subject it to something which is, at least as far as we can tell, painful. You know, we know that it's not harmful if carried out properly, but still, I mean, it goes completely against every instinct that we have. But it's a reminder that our bodies and our children's bodies are not ours. The mitzvah sachila, I hope everybody here likes eating matzah on Pesach. I hope everybody likes drinking dalet kosos. If you've never, you know, explored this topic, it's a fascinating one. What if I don't like matzah, Rabbi? What if I don't like drinking dalet kosos? It's not so pashut. We're not going to talk about situations of allergies right now, serious, you know, concerns, but I don't like it. I don't want to eat it. The answer is, it's not up to you. The laws of taras hamashpach in a general sense, family planning, these are all examples in which the Torah takes an active interest and, to a certain extent, sets limitations and imposes its system of belief and law upon us, not only our souls, not only our minds, not only our behaviors in general sense, but literally our bodies. Another interesting thought that I had, this is just a page from the opening volume of Sefer Nezikin of the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam. Those familiar, the Rambam has several important works, but the most famous, without a doubt, is what's called the Mishnah Torah, which the Rambam classifies and summarizes basically all the dinim of the Torah, all the Talmud and everything that we find in a very, very organized fashion. And there are 14 books, that's why it's called the Yad HaChazaka, 14 Yodalad, and one of the books is called Sefer Nezikin, and in Sefer Nezikin he has different topics. So one of them is called Nizkei Mamon, which deals, of course, with damages having to do with property damage. Hilchos Geneva, the laws of theft. Gezeilah Vaveda, the laws of different type of theft and lost objects. Chovel Mazik. And the last one over there is Hilchos Rotzeach Shmiras Nefesh. In this topic of Sefer Nezikin, the Rambam classifies as one group the laws of murder and Shmiras HaNefesh. In Shmiras HaNefesh, you will find the laws having to do with what? Protecting one's body, staying away from hazards and dangers. So it occurred to me, and if we get there, we'll see at the end, and actually I was Machavi and some Sham Shem Ufal Hirsch, it just occurred to me yesterday, I think, when I had this thought in my head. Again, I'm not sure it's to be Chiddush, but it's fascinating. The Rambam could have easily made another section, but he groups together the laws of murder together with the laws of Shmiras HaNefesh. And maybe the Rambam is basically saying, listen, it may not seem like murder, but if we act in a way which is harmful, which is hazardous, and maybe we'll say in a very general sense, although don't hold me to it, unhealthy, on some level, We are murdering ourselves, not instantly, and perhaps not literally, but on some level that's what it is. The Rambam was not one to hesitate at all to divide his books into further sections. He was a master at cataloging and classifying and breaking things down. He could have easily had two sections, Hilchos Ritzicha, Rotzeach, Shmiras HaNefesh, but he puts them together, conveying, I think, a very, very powerful message, and that is that they are one of the same. Now, what exactly is the source of the obligation from the Torah of maintaining our health? If you didn't know it beforehand, maybe you noticed the heading on the board outside of the ad that we put together to advertise the series, Minishmaitem Ma'od L'Nafsho Seichem, a very famous pasuk, which has been made, I think, even more famous because of its association with this topic that we're talking about over here. Before we look at the pasuk inside, let me show you where that comes from. It comes from a bracha, Gemara in Brachos Daf Lamed Beis. The Gemara tells a very strange story about a certain chassid, he's not named, a certain pious individual who was davening on the road. And there was a certain very distinguished individual, it's not clear who he was a king, but he's described to be as a sar, an officer, someone with great power and authority, greets him, and he did not respond. He didn't respond because he was davening Shmon Esrei, and he felt that it would be inappropriate for him to interrupt his davening. So the sar remarkably waited for him to finish his davening, and then he said to him, Reka, from where it's underlined, he said to Reka, which means you empty one, you dummy. It says in your Torah, we're going to see that inside in a moment. It says, guard yourself, protect your soul. It says, protect your souls. When I said hello to you, why didn't you respond? If I would cut your head off right now, nobody would stop me. Nobody, because I have every justification based on, you know, whatever system of law they were following then, to kill you right now and I won't have to answer to anyone. So he basically said, you risked your life just to serve your God. How could you do that? After all, it says in your Torah, I'm not interested right now. Of course we're interested in everything, but we're not going to focus right now on his answer. If you're interested, you can take a look at the Gemara Brachos Daf Lamed Beis. But what we are interested is the way the Gemara presents this as being the source. You know, where in the Torah would you find where it says that you should protect yourselves, your bodies? So, v'nishmartem ol d'nafsho seichem. What's very interesting about that, what does the word nefesh mean? I mean, how do we translate the word nefesh? Soul, right? So, if there's one word that you would think the Torah would not use to describe preserving one's health, it would be nefesh. But yet the Torah says, v'nishmartem ol d'nafsho seichem, which Chazal understands to mean, your body is your soul. And what is the context of these psukim? This comes from Dvarim Perek Dalet, where the Torah is talking about, believe it or not, nothing to do with health whatsoever, talking about but the moment of Maimon Har Sinai, of divine revelation, the greatest moment in all of history. And the Torah says, and I'm going to read this to you quickly, the two important phrases are bolded in red. Raki Shomer Lecho Shmar Nafshecha Ma'od. The Torah says, be very careful, guard yourself, protect yourselves. Petishkachas HaDvarim Asher Ro'u Einecha. Do not allow yourself to forget that which your eyes saw. And don't allow your hearts to forget what you saw. You should teach your children and your grandchildren. What should you teach them? Yom, that day, the day that we stood before Hashem at Har Sinai. Hashem Eli, Moshe is now speaking to the people. When God said to me, gather the people, so that they can hear me speak. So that they will then learn to fear me all of their days. That they live on the earth. And I'll teach your children as well. This is, of course, the basics of Judaism. That God says to Moshe, gather the people so they can hear me, so that they and their children and all their children for all future generations will know to fear me and to observe my law. Moshe says, that's what happened. I brought you, you stood by the mountain. The mountain was consumed in fire at Leva Shemayim to the heart of the heavens. Choshech, Hanan, Barafel. Darkness, a cloud, a thick cloud. And God spoke from the fire. Called Virmatem Shomim, you heard the voice. You didn't see any image, just heard a voice. And God told you his bris, his covenant, Aseres HaDvarim, what we call the Aseres HaDibros. And they would later what inscribed on two tablets. And then God instructed me to teach you the details of all the laws, to do them, And then what does it say again? V'nishmartem ha'od l'nafshoseichem. Guard your souls very much. You didn't see any image. The Torah goes on to prohibit making idols. And what the Torah is basically saying over here in this context is guard yourself, protect yourself, not, you know, exercise twice a week. Means what? Protect yourself from never forgetting what happened in Sinai and therefore never succumbing to the temptations of Avodah Zarah. Never think that you saw an image. You didn't see an image. There is no image of God. And yet the Gemara uses this as being what? The example, the source of the mitzvah, we'll call it a mitzvah in a general sense, without getting too technical at the moment, of the obligation of taking care of our health and making sure that we don't do things which are dangerous, hazardous, or unhealthy. So we're going to come back to this. I'm going to share with you a very nice thought as to why perhaps specifically in this context. But the question is first, why? So we're trying to build a case that it's important to take care of our bodies. And we start off by pointing out that our bodies and our souls are interconnected and they fuse. But on a practical level, if our children would ask us, if our grandchildren would ask us, we'll ask ourselves, why is it so important? Why does God really care, after all, if I have, you know, an extra serving of French fries? I use that as an example because that's my favorite food that I shouldn't eat too much of, anyway. And well, what's the big deal? You know, is it really a problem for me as an Eved Hashem? Is it really a problem for me as somebody who's trying to be a servant of God, somebody who worships Hashem, somebody who takes my relationship with God and Torah seriously? Why is it problematic? What is it? So I'm going to share with you three different suggestions. The first is the Sefer Achinuch. The Sefer Achinuch, Mitzvah Ayin Gimel. The Sefer Achinuch says the following: Mishorshi Mitzvah Zu. The roots of this mitzvah is as follows: Lefisha Haguf Kli LeNefesh. The guf, and this is a little different than we saw earlier, is a vessel, you know, using a figure of speech over here, which contains the soul. Uvo Taseh Pulasa. And it's through the guf that the nefesh is able to accomplish what it needs to in this world. V'zulaso, without the guf, lo tishlam lach t'chalala. The nefesh cannot do, the neshama cannot do what it needs to without the assistance, without the accommodation, without the partnership of the guf. And therefore, the neshama comes into the tzel, a beautiful word to use, into the protection, to the shadow of the guf, to assist it and to get what it needs, not to hurt it. God has no interest in hurting us. He wants to help us all. So he gives a mashal. He says that the guf, the body, is to the soul, like tongs are to the blacksmith. As long as they are strong and straight and they work properly, so then the uman could do what he needs to do. But if they're not, then he's not going to be able to make proper kalim. Therefore, he says the body is the same way. If the body is going to be misused, it's going to be abused, it's going to be weakened, it's going to be corrupted, so that is going to essentially impair, obstruct the ability of the nefesh to do what it needs to do. And so therefore, the Sefer Achinuch says, protection of the body is like protection of the soul. That if we protect our bodies, so we are essentially protecting the soul. Now, what's interesting about Sefer Achinuch is he seems to imply that there's nothing inherently important about protecting the body. It's just a means to the end. It's like we would call in Talmudic terms, like a hechsher mitzvah, right? It's something which enables us to accomplish a greater good, namely, taking care of our souls. That's the approach of the Sefer Achinuch. The Ber HaGola, a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, has a different approach. He says, Hatam, what is the reason? Why is it that the Torah tells us to take care of our bodies? Because God created a world in which He wants to do good by us. He conducts many kindnesses in this world. So that we will recognize the greatness of God, we will recognize how good God is to us. V'hamisakin es atzmo, but a person who puts himself in danger, ki'ilu moeis v'ratzon baro, v'inerotza lo v'avadasa v'lo v'maton scharo. It's as if a person is acting in a way in which he shows no appreciation whatsoever for what God does for him. Thanks for no thanks. I'm not interested in your gifts. I'm not interested in your help. There's no greater heretical act of disregard for God than for a person misusing, abusing, hurting his body. Because when we do this, we are essentially taking the greatest gift that we have in this world and we're throwing it back at the one who's given it to us. So this is a very different approach in the Sefer HaChinuch. We're not focusing right now on taking care of our bodies so that they can enable us to better serve God. We're just saying this is the greatest gift in the world, that God has given us a body that functions either perfectly or well enough that we could be here to think about it and talk about it. And now I'm going to take that, and I'm going to abuse it, I'm going to misuse it, I'm going to mistreat it, I'm going to wear it down, whatever it is that I do to it. So it's really an act of tremendous zilzal. I mean, just think for a moment in your own head about the greatest gift that you ever got from somebody else. And imagine taking that gift and just mistreating it in front of that person. How insulting that would be. So over here, we're not concerned about insulting God. God's not going to get insulted. But as far as we're concerned, how could we do that? How could we take the greatest gift that we have been given and misuse it? And here's a beautiful quote I found from Yisrael Salanter. It's very powerful. He says, "Ani choshev, I think, ki api chachameinu zechonu lebracha, based on what I understand from Chazal, ein l'chachet gadol yoser m'nios kafui tova. There's no greater sin than a person being a kafui tov, which means being an ingrate, a person failing to appreciate the good he receives. V'atova ha'gadol v'yoser shenosein HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'adam u'briyas ha'gul. Without a doubt, he says, the greatest tova that God gives for us is health. Through our health, we're able to serve Hashem. A person who does not take care of his body and does not protect his health, says Yisrael Salanter, I suspect that such a person is in this category of a person who is committing the greatest chait. I mean, it's very strong words, but when you think about it, it's hard to argue. He says the greatest gift that we have in this world is our health, and to go ahead and to take advantage of that or work against it is an act of being a kafui tov. The last approach, the third, this is not necessarily, you know, the only approaches you find out there, but the third I'm going to share with you now is from the Rambam. And the Torah has a very similar formulation. The Rambam Hilchos Deos writes the following. Ho'il v'yos ha'guv bari v'shali midaki Hashem. The Rambam says that preserving our health and taking care of our body is important as part of our avodas Hashem. The Rambam takes a very practical approach. This may sound like it's similar to the Sefer HaChinuch, but I'm listing it separately because I think it's much more practical and in a certain sense much more tangible. The Rambam says it's impossible for a person to properly understand his role in this world, to let's say for a moment to study Torah, to immerse himself in the spiritual life if he is preoccupied with his health. Therefore, the Rambam says we have to distance ourselves from things that will harm our bodies. We have to try to have a lifestyle in which we act in a way which is healthy, which is consistent with the maintenance, not only of longevity, so we can have a long life, not only so we should be able to avoid, you know, serious illness, which, you know, is also true as well, but just so we should be able to function a normal lifestyle. If you've never tried it, so you have to try it to see. I don't do it enough. But when I exercise, and I take the time to do it, it may seem like a chore at the time. It's coming out of something else. I don't feel I have the time. But I'm speaking from personal experience. The energy that we have running through our body is literally on a very practical level. And I'm not trying to get all, corny with you over here. It's just on a very practical level. You feel more energized. You feel stronger. If a person is then able to go ahead and to devote themselves to what we're here for. The Torah writes, Mitzvah la'anig atzmo b'midah tova v'anhaga tova l'shmar b'yoso k'dei shibari v'chazak la'avodas habari yisala. Says the Torah, it's a mitzvah to act the world in a way that is healthy, to conduct a healthy lifestyle so that we should be strong and healthy and able to serve our Creator. Now, I want to come back to a question I had earlier, and we're going to wrap up soon. Question we started with earlier is, why does the Torah put the psukim, which speak about the importance of maintaining our physical health, in the context of Memming Harsina. What may be the connection? So I saw a very nice explanation in the Sefer Aseh L'Charav from Chaim David Alevi, who's one of the previous chief rabbis of Tel Aviv. He has a whole set of Sfarim, Aseh L'Charav, very beautiful Sfarim. So he writes over there, Kavanas HaRambam Rura Yoser. He says the intention of the Rambam is very clear. Im Tzivsa Torah, Hishamei L'cho Ushmar Nafshecha. If the Torah is commanding us, remember, guard yourself, Pentishkachas Maimed HaSinai V'Nitzina HaTorah, don't forget the moment of divine revelation and the moment that you receive the Torah. What you saw, what you didn't see. Why? So you should not come to what? To follow Avodah Zarah. Our rabbis understood with the depth of their knowledge that there was a deeper message over here. There was a deeper message that was running through this mitzvah. Is it possible to instruct a person to do something or just to be in a certain state of being, a state of mind? For a person who his health is weak, it's been insulted through whatever it is that he's done to his body. A person who, because of his illness, can't think straight and he's preoccupied and is always taking trips to the doctor. Is it how's this person going to find any time to do, to think, to be? Umikan brura hamaskana. And from here, Chazal deduced, it's clear, ki barosh v'rishona, the first obligation that we have as people, shemor al b'riyoscha, guard your health. Kidei sh'oz tuchal l'shmor gamma ma'ashet tzivso ba'osu ma'amin ha'sinai. Only then can we begin to really take seriously our jobs in this world. We have a role in this world. We have a mission. We are supposed to carry a message, a divine message, and it's very difficult. The first thing we need to do is make sure that we are healthy enough to be able to do it. Now, I haven't said this yet, and maybe I should have said it earlier, and maybe it's obvious, but I just feel that I need to say, and that is that, you know, we all know that in life we could do everything, and we still may find that we are in and out of the doctor's office because of situations that are completely beyond our control. There's only so much we can do. At the end of the day, some of us are going to be healthier than others, irrespective of how we treat our bodies. That being said, I think everybody here will accept and agrees that we play an important role, and we need to do our part. And our part is to take care of ourselves as much as we can so that we can then be available. We can be available physically, mentally, spiritually, to be able to serve Hashem the way that we are supposed to. Beautiful story that I saw. This is a story about Rav Elazar Menachem Schach, who, and I write over here, he lived from 1899 to 2001. Right, you could do the math, but I think it's relevant to this story. Right, he's not the only Gadol B'Torah who lived, past the age of 100. And you know, maybe it's coincidence, maybe not. But listen to this beautiful story from Talmud of his. He says, "Kashen nodel la Rav Schach shalechem hafui mikemach malei who chashiv l'vrius." When Rav Schach learned that whole wheat products are healthier than just regular processed grain. From that point on, he was makbid, he was only going to eat whole wheat. You see, maybe this Talmud had the schus to bring him every Shabbos, he would bring a bag with four rolls of whole wheat bread from the Angel Bakery. And every meal he would cut them for Lecha Mishnah. It was a Chirani, I remember, one time they didn't have whole wheat, so he had regular, white flour. Darash v'shev shalom, he says, Heichan ashchoro shel Yechezkel. Where are the dark ones, the black ones, the whole wheat ones, the Yechezkel brings me. So it's a cute little story. And I'm not saying, based on this story, we should only have whole wheat. Not the point, but look at the way an individual, it's also a beautiful picture, an individual's whole life was Torah, he was consumed with Torah, you'd think that the last thing he would think about, pay any attention to, is what kind of bread he was eating. Just give it to me and let's move on. But he was mocked, once he learned, and I don't think he sat and he poured over the books and he studied and he called physicians from all over the land. Somebody told him, he did a little research and that was it. But at that point, from that point on, he was mocked. It wasn't just like, okay, if you're giving me a trial, I'd rather have whole wheat. He was makbid because it was healthier. And that's part of my Avodas Hashem. It's a beautiful story. I heard this from a person. I don't know if he wants me saying his name, so I won't say his name, but I've heard from a person who claimed that that he was there, one of the Mesharsim of Rav Soloveitchik, a person who had the zchus to be Meshamishim in his home, that apparently, according to him, the Rav loved chocolate ice cream. Very interesting. That's not the kind of thing you see in too many books about the Rav. Apparently the Rav loved chocolate ice cream, and his doctor told him he shouldn't have too much of it, but he really, really liked it. So apparently, according to this individual, every couple of nights he would say to him, can you please go to the freezer and get me a spoonful? He didn't go himself. He didn't fill it. He said, can you please go? And he would get a spoonful, and he would get that whatever hanah he got from it. That was it. So he partook of the pleasures of this world, but he understood, you know, not just moderation, but in that particular case, that he really needs to keep a safe distance, and he did, because that's you know, that's what the doctor ordered. There's positive responsibility to live a healthy lifestyle and promote physical well-being, and that's pretty much what we've been focusing on. And there's a prohibition, or there are prohibitions of engaging in harmful, hazardous, and unhealthy behaviors. And just in conclusion, I want to point out that I've tried to present this in somewhat of a positive way, the importance of promoting a healthy lifestyle in a positive way. But there are things that are just, bottom line, are going to be prohibited. The Aruch HaShulchan said something which is fascinating. I'm not sure he's the first one to say it, but something which is completely fascinating. I want you to think, before we read this together, I want you to think, forgive me if this is out of place. I know most of you, I don't know everybody here. I'm assuming that nobody here would go ahead and to take a piece of non-kosher food and put it in your mouth. You wouldn't. That's it. It's not kosher, I wouldn't have it. Why? Because I can't. You know, again, whether I, you know, too much, you know, the doctor said don't have this, whatever it is, whatever your poison is, you know, chocolate cake, chocolate ice cream, you know, too much sugar, whatever it is. Says there, Aruch HaShulchan, kishem she'asur lechov lishos dvar iser, just as you're not allowed to eat something which is not kosher, kamokein asur lechov lishos dvar shel sakana. Now again, dvar shel sakana doesn't necessarily mean, you know, an extra spoon of ice cream. But I think conceptually it's a very important idea. And that is, things that are harmful to us are usr. They're not kosher. A member of the shul, also not here, I'm not going to quote him by name, I don't know if he'd appreciate it, who suggested to me on several occasions, and I still think it's radical, but as I get older and I think about it more, I think it's less and less radical. I don't think it'll ever happen. And that is that he said he thinks that the kosher agencies, organizations, should not give hashgach on foods that are unhealthy. Okay, I see somebody in the back agrees. Okay, I don't think it'll happen. But things that are l'chol adeos, just bad for you. Things that are just bad, how could you give it? Whatever, is it OU, a Cup K, RCBC, how could you do that? What are you telling people? You're telling people the ingredients are kosher. But again, the Aruch HaShulchan is saying it's unhealthy. He's saying it's dangerous, it's harmful. And therefore, just as if the ingredients are not kosher, you would say, I'm sorry, you can't eat it. It should be the same thing over here. You can't give hashgach on something which is unhealthy. But they do, for whatever reason. And then he goes on to say, "Umarigav l'shas" is a concept which is found often in the Gemara, "Sakanta chamira meyisura." That in some respects, something which is dangerous, something which is hazardous to the body, is even worse, should be treated more strictly than something which is only, again, I say that, you know, tongue-in-cheek, only an iser. You know, we shouldn't assume, well, you know, if it's not kosher, it's worse. Not necessarily so. The Torah says, "V'achas dimchem l'nafshoseichem edrosh." God says, in that context, maybe talking about suicide, Chazal tell us, I'm going to hold you responsible for your own blood. You have to take care of your body. The Pasuk says, in the Shemayim L'Nafsh HaSechem Yisro, Ula'ola Mayamad Adam Atma Mokham Sakana. A person should never do things which are unhealthy, and to say, oh, Yasir L'Nesh. You know, God will take care of me. He'll do a miracle, if that's what it takes. D'Shem Elo Yasir L'Nesh. You don't know. And if he does, Menachem Lom Yisro Yosef, so don't take withdrawals when you don't need to. Save them, because you'll need them later. Don't go ahead and wear down all your zechuyos in this world because you're living a reckless lifestyle. By the way, we're not talking about risk-taking tonight, any specific examples. I heard someone several weeks ago give a shiur on this topic, and somebody in White Torah, I don't know, it was a woman, I don't remember who it was, but she was talking about this topic, and she said, she just threw out bungee jumping in this example. And it struck me, because she wasn't giving a shiur on bungee jumping, because she just mentioned that casually in passing. And I'm not sure that bungee jumping is necessarily something that is usher at all. We shouldn't assume that just because something seems crazy and something is scary to most people, that it's necessarily usher, even though, you know, one out of a million, you may actually die doing it, or I don't know if it's one out of a million, maybe 2 million, 10 million, I don't know what it is. But sometimes things in this world that seem very scary are not necessarily truly dangerous. You could make a case that you shouldn't do bungee jumping because you can't take even that small risk. But don't assume that things that seem to be, you know, things that only daredevils would do or crazy people would do are necessarily dangerous. Dangerous things could sometimes be much less exciting, exotic, and expensive than jumping out of a plane, but could be, you know, far more harmful and lethal. Finally, I said finally several times, so really good fun. The Rambam, this is, you know, that's the one thing about Soshi, you know, when you're at the end. I don't really remember the end. But the Rambam over here lists, I wanted you to see that it's not only things you should do, but it's things you shouldn't do. And the Rambam Hilchos Matzeach says, he's talking about a makeh, the fence around the roof, and he says, not only around the roof, the same thing as around a pit in the ground, around a pool, you have to have a fence around the pool. And he says, anything which is dangerous, you have to take care of it. And it's a responsibility, it's a biblical responsibility. And if you don't, you're mevatel naseh, you're over this at the raisa. And he says, harbi devarim asoch chachamim nei sheyesh b'em sakonos b'vash. There are many things that Chazal forbade because they understood that they were harmful. And this is an ever-expanding list, says the Rambam. The Rambam says in Hilchos Deos, we don't know everything that we know. So clearly, the Rambam 1,000 years ago didn't know everything we know today, although he was remarkably ahead of his time. But, you know, as we learn more about the world, about ourselves, and even the changes in the environment, so we see that certain things are harmful, we are required to what? To protect ourselves from that. There's one more quote over here which is very long. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But it's in this quote that I actually saw, that idea that I mentioned earlier. Sham Shulfar Hirsch over here, and the Sefer Chorev, talks about the importance of guarding one's body and protecting one's body and living a healthy lifestyle. And he says, Khalila l'chalila, God forbid that we should do things which are harmful to us. And then he actually uses that expression, Korifion b'hashkota ha'kausha b'kalam b'tzideh. Anything that we do which is harmful to our bodies, even if it seems very, very small, he ritzicha chalkit. He says, that is, partial murder. You know, on some level, we are killing ourselves slowly when we do things that are harmful to our bodies, and we're not allowed to do that. And so therefore we see from here that maintenance of one's body is definitely an essential component of our avodas Hashem. This has been, as I said, as it would be, just sort of a general introduction to the topic of maintaining our health. Now to get practical, what are the 5 most unhealthy habits of Orthodox Jews? So for that you're going to have to come back next week. By the way, I will tell you that several people have offered on their own, you know, what they think the top 5 should be. I'm pretty sure in my mind that I've narrowed it down to my top 5. But if you want to suggest anything, feel free to reach out to me. I'm not married to number 5. Obviously, I wanted to come up with a number that we could work with. And I have ideas and thoughts about things that I think as a community we are more susceptible to. But if you have any ideas and thoughts that you'd like to, send my way before next Monday night, I'd love to hear from you. Return next Monday night at 8:30. Thank you very much.